Welcome to Thanks for the Memories. If you want us to stop podcasting, you can put your hands on our hot, tight little bodies and make us.
Yeah.
That's right.
That's right.
Hello. My name is Leslie. My pronouns are they, them, and I live in the hellmouth of South Philadelphia. And joining me for this very special pair of episodes is my stalwart companion, Kate.
Hello, I'm Kate. My pronouns are she, her, or they, them, and I am also in the hellmouth of South Philadelphia.
And here for the hat trick, the third time returning guest, Ash from Horror Vanguard. Ash, hello.
Hey, it's Ash, pronouns they, them, and I'm in the hellmouth of podcasting. It's great to be here, as always.
Yeah, the liminal space of podcasting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I exist kind of as the opposite of a robotic sex doll. I'm just like a disembodied voice that like lectures you about TV.
So unsexy. Yeah.
Except for like that one person out there who's like, oh yeah, talk more about Buffy
this
and
this is
Toulouse.
My entire shit. Yeah.
Yeah, that is my, I mean, I guess that might be my entire shit. That's how I end up meeting so many people on Twitter, so...
That's true. We are all here.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. Yeah, how did we find each other?
Oh, no.
Oh, dear.
Someone created us in their dorm room and then just left. And now we're picking up the pieces. Yeah, they made us all to be podcasters.
Yeah.
Oh God, too real.
What a horrible, yeah, what a horrible idea.
The Uber caster, yeah. This is making me miserable.
All right, sorry. Let's do vibes.
Let's do vibes. I'm particularly excited to hear yours, Kate, but let's save that for the end, like, okay. You know, as a big finish. So, Ash, okay. How about you go first?
Yeah, I don't know. I would say right now my vibes are so last night I received the gift of prophecy from the hair spirits. And gave myself a mullet, so right now my vibes are DIY mullet. And I gotta say, it worked out.
It looks incredible, yeah.
Oh, thank you. Excellent. Thank you, everyone. And this visual medium of podcasting, thank you so much.
Yeah.
Yeah. 2024 is all about the mullet.
Yeah, listen,
you
listeners,
heard it here
it
first.
It is, it's making a comeback.
Cut yourself a DIY mullet. It's the most Buffy thing you could do somehow.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed.
You either make a robot sex doll or cut yourself a DIY mullet. Those are really the two paths, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. If you're gonna do a thing,
which
those
way,
are the two
Western
things
man.
You can do.
Yeah, which way?
Yeah. Mullet, sex robot. Actually, that's not that far off, really.
What about a mullet or a sex robot with a mullet?
Whoa.
Now
that's too much, Leslie.
Yeah, now we're just playing Calvin Ball.
That's what we call dialectics.
Too queer.
Is that a synthesis?
Yes. Yes.
Hegel's doll.
That
Hegel
is the title of the
mullet.
Episode.
Hegel's mullet.
Hegel's mullet sex doll.
Oh,
oh
God, I
boy,
love this show.
Wow.
You can really let your mullet hair down on this episode, you know, on the show.
That's true. Comb out your mustache. Let down your mullet hair.
So it's a podcast about Buffy and hockey hair. It's a good time.
Yes, yeah, 100%.
Leslie, would you like to do your vibes?
No, I really don't. No, my vibes are dog shit today. I just had a really shitty day today, and like a million annoying things happened to make me want to be in a medically induced coma.
No.
So that's where I'm at today. Ouch. But you know what? It's fine. I'm here with I'm here with Buffy and two people that I really admire. So that can't be all bad. So
it's true.
All right, Kate, let her rip.
Okay,
I'm so ready for it.
All right, I guess Ash already knows about this, I think, but
I'm ready because you presented a quandary and I immediately had a solution for it.
Okay, so I just got home from my Christmas break with my family, and one of my favorite things about coming home is like fully decompressing and having a day that's just about things that I like, which is like getting fixated on weird things that I find on the internet, watching Buffy, hanging out with my cats, drinking too much coffee. And so this morning, one of the first things that my partner said to me is, "Do you know what necro pants are?" And I was like, "What? No?" And I was thinking like that it was like neoprene, Neopets pants or something. Like it was some sort of like raver gear maybe. But Neopets. What they actually are are it's a Icelandic witchcraft. They think that these pants never existed outside of folklore. There is a pair of these pants in the Icelandic Folklore Museum, but they're like a replica. So basically, you would get a friend to agree to, when your friend dies, you could skin them from the waist down very, very carefully, and wear their bottom half as pants on yourself. And then you would have to steal a coin from a widow and you would put it in the empty scrotum of the pants. And then you would do like a little, you know, ritual kind of thing. And somehow the pants will soon become indistinguishable from your own body, and the scrotum of the pants will miraculously fill with coins endlessly.
Which is a slot machine.
Yeah, which like, I guess my main thing about this is like, how do you get the coins out?
That's very, and I have the answer.
Okay.
It's very simple.
Okay.
You install one of those coin purse snaps with the two little prongy things.
Okay.
And then you just pop it open whenever you need, you know, change for the bus.
Yeah. All right. Fair.
Problem solved.
I like that.
I like this idea. I have a kind of problem with it, because what if your friend does not have a... Well, I mean...
Why?
What if your friend that agrees to this does not possess a scrotum? Where does it... Oh. Where do the coins go?
Well, I mean, you have to find... I guess you could put them inside, but I would say it would be easier to find a friend with a scrotum.
We do not like stand gender essentialist necropants.
Exactly, that's true. You could also put them in a vagina, I guess.
Oh my god. Okay, I figured it out.
Okay.
The scrotum gives you coins. The vagina gives you dollar bills like out of a vending machine.
Oh shit.
Oh,
okay,
beautiful.
So actually it's better.
Or like an ATM.
To skin
perfect.
A lady. Okay. Or a vagina haver.
Thank you, Adam, for...
Yeah, thank you, Adam, for just like really just out of nowhere. Have you ever heard of necro pants?
Just, yeah.
And that's why we've lived together for 17 years. He still surprises me. Every morning wonderful. He says something very strange to me. And I've spent the whole day thinking about them.
That's great.
And I love that. I love that that's my return to my own home. Because I feel like thinking about necro pants all day at my mom's house is weird. Like, her house is too wholesome and sweet.
Yeah, you don't want to do that, especially around the holidays.
Yeah. Really, hey, everyone, I got you necro pants.
It's the gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah. What if I gave someone a promise for necro pants? Like, I give them to next year to Adam. I'm like, honey, it's on. You can wear
me.
Yeah.
That's going to be in the next issue of the Williams-Sonoma holiday catalog.
Yeah.
A pair of necro pants. They're going to cost like $4,000.
I hope they're more than that. I don't know. 4,000 is a real steal for a necropant.
I guess it's true.
I mean, it is infinite money.
Yeah, yeah, right. So it's your, yeah, you'll make that money back.
That's
true. The price would have to be something Faustian, like you pay for your necropants.
Firstborn, oh my god, what if it's like a O. Henry story where you like give someone your like the bottom half of your skin and they give away, I don't know, all of their coins or like something really stupid.
Oh, like and gift then, of the Magi style?
Yeah.
Gotcha, yeah. Gotcha. That's so stupid.
They do a boxing Helena and you, I don't know.
Oh my god.
That's a movie where it's a movie directed by David Lynch's daughter where Audrey from Twin Peaks gets her limbs cut off. Yeah.
Oh lord.
It's an interesting one.
Good stuff.
Anyway.
Hey, if you weren't aware already, I'm sure you've surmised by now that this is a Buffy podcast. The whole impetus of the show is to talk about Buffy the Vampire Slayer and related themes and stuff. So
yeah,
which of the Scooby Gang gives you the best necro pants is my question.
Oh, Giles. He seems the most financially stable. He is a business owner.
Yeah. But wait, does it matter? Because you're going to get the coin from a widow.
Oh.
So I guess whose lower half would you like to wear the most? That's the question. I'm going to say Spike.
Oh, this is such a paradox, because Xander would be the easiest one to kill and skin, but true, also the least pleasing to wear.
Right. I don't want to wear Xander all day long.
He'd be the easiest to, like, convince. You just like show him a boob and he'd be like, yeah, I'll let you do whatever you want.
yeah I'll give you the bottom half of my skin, baby.
But yeah, I wouldn't want to be reminded of his existence in any fashion.
Well, speaking of giving people your skin, I Was Made to Love You. We watched two episodes that pair together very strangely, but I kind of liked it because it's they're both about bodies and humanity and like when you're you and when you're not you.
And like what makes you you.
Yeah, exactly. And if
so
first episode is called I Was Made to Love You. Buffy must stop a heartbroken young woman who is manufactured to be the perfect girlfriend from destroying the city, which she does not do, and then finds herself comforting the creation over the loss of love in both of their lives. This is an episode that I like forget exists a lot, but it's actually really sad
because it's like it's like one of the classic Monster of the Week episodes, and we haven't had one of those in a while. We've been like dealing with Riley and dealing with Glory, so like just to have a complete like start the story at the beginning, wrap everything up sort of by the end, is just totally like foreign at this point in season 5.
Yeah, and we get our first Warren appearance.
Yeah. Okay. So, let's play our game because I'm very excited to talk about Warren. So Warren is played by Adam Bush. Adam Bush is his name of the actor. Let's start. Let's guess how old he is today. How old do you think the actor who played Warren is? Let's start with Ash.
Ooh. Oh, this is really hard. I'm
gonna
take
one of those faces. Like he could be 17 and like 45.
Yeah.
I'm gonna take the high risk, high reward and say he's like 57 or something wild. He's way older than we think he is.
Okay. Kate?
I was gonna say 52.
So he was born in 1978, actually making him 45 years old.
Oh shit, he's so young.
Yeah.
He's way younger than most of the other people.
The funny thing about Adam Bush is he was also in a Nickelodeon television series called The Mystery Files of Shelby Woo. He was like the guy friend to Shelby Woo. And my acting coach in high school was a villain on one of the episodes of The Mystery Files of Shelby Woo. So
that rocks.
Nona Lee Davis played some person who tried to murder somebody by, if I remember the episode correctly, somebody was in like a face casing, like they were getting their face plastered for some reason.
Okay.
And she came in and tried to snuff out the nose holes.
Oh, shit.
Awesome.
It's a good way to kill somebody.
Okay, cool. It was really neat. So there you go. That's my like Kevin Bacon 6 degrees of separation from Warren.
From Warren.
Mm-hmm.
Warren, one of the future big bads.
Yeah, we're going to be seeing him.
The trio.
Yeah.
I'm very excited about that.
A bunch of goofy guys up to hijinks who certainly do nothing wrong or problematic.
They all look like fucking dorks. Is like these big dorks. Oh
God.
It.
I just, so it's really a quartet with Xander when you think about it. But I'm gonna try and put away my giant Xander is evil poster.
No, you don't have to.
Honey, wave it loud. Wave Feel it loud. Free. Wave it proud. Yeah. This is an anti-Xander podcast.
He's not bad. Like at the beginning of this episode, I was extremely surprised. No, I mean he always fucks it up. He always fucks it up.
Okay. You. Okay. Say.
I'm just saying that.
Defend him. Try to defend him, and then I will counter with that.
Well, So at the beginning of the episode, you know, Buffy's punching the shit out of a, like, person in a big, giant suit who turns out to be Xander and, like, yelling about Spike being in love with her. And then she says, which I love this line, "My secret to attracting men is slapping them around and torturing them. The nice guys will leave, but then, like, people like Spike love it." And Xander's like, "It's not your problem." But then he's like, "Hey, can I cop a feel?" So he gets there for a second.
But he fucking doesn't, and I'll tell you why.
But he doesn't. Okay, all right.
But he doesn't, because all the shit that he says in the beginning of this episode was the literal, actual, like, linguistic opposite of the shit that he said to her when Riley left.
Oh, I know. That's why it's so complicated.
He was like, "It's your fault. You pushed them away. Like, Riley's the perfect guy. I'm not gay, but I would totally, like, hold his balls in my hand tenderly for 5 minutes. Like
a baby bird.
And not even for the chance of getting coins.
No. Exactly. No, just coins. Just cause. Just cause he just thinks they're soft.
Yeah. Powdered. They have to be. So yeah, that pissed me off so much because it was a complete 180 from everything that he said before. So it's like, I'm not giving him a pass just because he, like, maybe had a come to Jesus moment that we saw off screen, apparently. So no, Xander was not.
This is Xander we're talking about too, right? This is like, we're in season 5 now. Like, we know the only reason that Xander is like consoling Buffy or trying to be supportive is because he's angling on fucking her at some point. Like, he's not a friend.
Still,
he's like,
to this day,
"Oh, that's so sad. Oh, that's terrible. Oh, why is your shirt still on?"
Fair enough. No, you're right. I'm being too nice.
This is the No Nice to Xander podcast. Yeah, this is no, the Zeppo. Right. We get to be mean to him for every other episode in the show.
Well, I guess I was so completely distracted by Warren being literally the worst.
Oh my God, yeah.
That I started giving Xander passes, which I shouldn't do. I shouldn't do that, guys.
So yeah, it's like comparing, like, a cat turd to, like, an elephant turd. Like,
right,
the cat turd
is
still a turd, but it doesn't look that bad in comparison.
It's a lot smaller. Mm-hmm. Like, you can deal with
a
it.
A lot less smelly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so should we talk about April? The heartbroken young woman?
Who looks exactly like Shannon Doherty that I thought it was her for a minute. And I was like, what are you doing in this episode? Like, you're famous at this point. But it's not, that is not her. They are not the same.
No.
Not the same people.
Well, it makes sense that she would be manufactured to look like a person like Shannon Doherty.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like the girlfriend. Mm-hmm.
The preferences. Yeah. Of the time. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
So I just like, I don't know. The idea, I just think there's so much interesting stuff in here about who, once you like start feeling for April, that's when like this episode is really interesting to me.
Yeah.
Because at first, you know, it's just like, okay, so she's like a sex robot that this horrible man created. But then like the sadness of her, like, you know, being left behind by him and like clearly figured out somehow, like they never really explain why she's able to keep going, right?
Yeah, he just says her battery should have wound down by now, but they didn't. So I don't know, lithium.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but just like when Buffy is, I mean, I'm skipping all the way to the end, but when Buffy is sitting with her at the end, it's like she's sitting with her as she dies.
Yeah.
And she's like trying to cheer herself up with all of the like ridiculous idioms that like Warren put into her brain. Like he couldn't even give her something interesting and original to say at the end.
You know? She's still just,
Like, well, I was a good girlfriend. Warren was a great guy. I should make, lemonade out of lemons. It's so heartbreaking. I don't know. Am I over?
No, like, I think
over identifying with April.
No, I don't think so, because like you know, there are situations where like you kind of have to do that to yourself. You know, you have to tell the sappy, overused idioms to yourself just to like soothe something, because otherwise there's just like, it's just miserable. Like, so really anything, even if it's fake or manufactured or like literally just printed on a mug at like TJ Maxx, like anything to like, you know, cover up the fact that like Warren was a piece of shit, and also he was your whole world, literally.
Right.
Yeah, her character is so sympathetic too, like everything about her is just like heartbreaking.
I know. Oh, God. I just had a moment where I thought about Zizek, and I was like, I shouldn't do that. But I was thinking about, Desire. Like, the moment that Desire is fulfilled, you don't want it anymore.
Well, who said it, but it was like, you can be the juiciest, ripest, perfect peach, and there's still someone out there who hates peaches. I don't know who said that. That might have been on a mug at TJ Maxx that I saw.
Yeah, I think that was like Zizek, actually.
It was Zizek.
Oh, yeah. And
can anybody do a Zizek impression?
Not on your life.
I wish. I would have gotten so much further in life. Peaches. Oh, my God. Now that we're talking about peaches, I just want to hear Zizek sing Fuck the Pain Away.
Oh, God. That asshole, by the way, that asshole, like, he could just not be transphobic. But anyway,
no, I think that point about Desire is really strong too, because like, it, fucking Warren making April is so like prescient in a world where people are like making AI girlfriend robot website things, and like,
yeah,
it reminds me of so Alain Badiou has this beautiful book about love and communism called In Praise of Love.
Oh, I need to put that on my list for next year.
It's so fucking good. But one of the big points that I take away from, I read that book way too often, but one of my, like, the points that I always go back to in it is, like, love is kind of like the celebration of difference. And April and these AI, like, waifu bot things, they're an attempt to, like, create a lover with no difference.
Yeah.
Like, April doesn't exist. She's just an extension of Warren's desire.
Yeah.
And, absolutely. Like, it's just, And then she becomes self-aware, sort of. And it's just so like, oh, April, honey, no, you can do better.
Yeah, really?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And like the idea that you can create like the perfect woman. And I think in this case, like it's extremely gendered too, because it is.
Oh,
like,
yeah, yeah.
It is this incredibly like docile, except when she doesn't get what she wants. But like, she's like, you know, she exists to serve him. And like, there's a point, I don't know if you guys saw this, but like, when it goes into her like Terminator bot,
yeah, yeah,
thing on the side, it just says,
"Oh
like,
God, yeah,
kissing, positions, fetish," and it's just all the bullshit that he just like programmed in for this person, you know?
Yeah, just and nothing thinking, about like, nothing about like interests or topics to converse with. Like that's not what. Yeah, she's just like. A shell.
Yes.
A fleshlight that can talk.
Right?
Yeah. Warren is just so one of those guys posting like an AI generated milkmaid made with like cloven demonoid hands with a caption, "It's so over for you, fem cells."
Yeah, like, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's like return with a V.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Fucking bullshit.
Yeah. I mean, we were just talking about this earlier today that, like, there's more and more research into how, like, globally destructive AI is. Not just aesthetically destructive, but, you know, it's like...
physically, environmentally,
it's like Bitcoin where, you know, it's like there is a there. Like, there are like, actual, you know, server factories, et cetera, where, like... takes huge amounts of energy to do these things.
They have to grind up like 4,000 killer whales a day just to generate
basically
one image of Drake with boobies.
Yeah, like just nothing even aesthetically interesting, you know, just like the amount of work we are doing to just like produce pictures of like traditional kids with six fingers. It's so fucking weird.
Like just look at a Rockefeller for once.
Yeah, I just think it's crazy. Like you could just hire a dumb artist to paint that thing for you. You know, like it just doesn't make any sense. And like it would be so much less destructive. They would have five fingers if you would like them to. You know, like
there's like such like an obfuscated libidinal economy thing going on here, right? Because instead of like in the case of Warren, like instead of doing what Warren needs to do, and that's like unpacking his relationship to the patriarchy, which is the thing that cock blocks him eternally.
Yeah.
You know, like this thing that's like deeply psychically difficult for like this cishet man to accomplish. He's just going to like how many slave children died in the lithium mines so he could build a fuck bot with oral sex file 1 through 7.
Yeah.
You know, like the petroleum, like right now there are pieces of April and not the wonderful indie movie about a young woman coming home for Thanksgiving. But literal pieces of April.
Oh man, I watched that movie when I was younger. Oh. Yeah.
God, I watched that movie when I was like 18, 19. It was like forever ago.
Yeah.
Oh, I got a cramp.
Oh. But it's true. Yeah, it's just like, I don't know. I mean, I understand. I guess we could talk about like the justification of like sex robots and toys.
Let's get into teledildonics.
Yeah. You know, because like, where does the line cross? Like, I mean, obviously, like Warren said he didn't make a toy. He wanted to make a girlfriend, you know, which I think is very different from like making a thing to get off with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, he said that, but then he only put in fetish file 1 through 6.
Well, yeah.
Like,
but that's all he thinks a girlfriend is.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes.
Yeah. That's worse. That's awful.
It is worse.
But then landed a human meat girlfriend with Katrina, and then didn't like tell her about the sex robot, like, have an open conversation, be like, hey, I was in a really bad spot emotionally when I built April the sex robot, and, like, now I have to deal with the consequences of my actions, so sorry. Like,
yeah.
How did, like, he land her? I don't know.
I really don't know.
That poor girl must have horrible self-esteem.
She needs a girl's night out. She needs a mani-pedi. She needs, like we're doing this like a SEAL Team 6 rescue operation.
Yeah. Well, she got herself out of there. I'm glad that she lived. True. I forgot, because I thought that April killed her.
Oh, God. Oh, wouldn't that be awful?
Yeah. Oops.
Oh, no. Murdered by my crazy boyfriend's semi-sentient fleshlight.
Yeah. Oh, God. But, like, the saddest, yeah, I think the saddest part about it is that, like, you know, at first you're thinking of her as, like, a semi-sentient fleshlight. And then it's, like, as she goes and Buffy sits with her as she's dying, you're like, oh, fuck. Like, he really did try and make her human. Or maybe it's just that she looks so human that you just can't help but feel bad.
Yeah, I think that has a lot to do with it. Like, she wasn't very, like, autonomic. I don't know what the adjective would be for that. But, like, she didn't look like she came out of Pirates of the Caribbean. You know what I mean? The Rile.
I mean, imagine if she was just a fleshlight sitting on that swing.
Oh, my God.
Talking.
Yeah, the lips and are, she's like, moving Buffy. Around.
Or it's, you gotta, it's like, make lemonade from I don't know why a fleshlight talks that way.
It's got like a Mickey Mouse voice.
Yeah. Fleshlights talk like, yeah, talk like Mickey Mouse. Well, we can use Mickey Mouse.
Make sure
Mouse
to use a water based lubricant. But no, like I think something about April that's, like, I don't know, really, like, jarring for me now, or like in my rewatch and prep for this episode, was like, the kind of, like, labor behind AI, right? AI is never, like, just this thing. There is no full automation, right? That's, like, that's mythology, right? That's fantasy. There's, yeah, always going to be humans getting caught in the gears somewhere. And especially now, like, the more we learn about AI, like, oh, that cute little AI pizza delivery robot. Oh, no, actually, that's a horrible factory labor condition in the Philippines where they're piloting those things around. It's a nightmare.
Right.
And then, like, with April, too, like, you know, she's there to supplant someone's labor. Like, Warren isn't, if Warren would have made the world's most advanced fuck doll and, like, would have made it from an honest standpoint of, like, no, I'm making this thing for some freak shit, it would have been cool as hell.
Yeah.
But instead he's like, I want to, I mean, like, he's not thinking this literally, of course, but he's like, I'm trying to find ways to, like, supplant and, like, extract reproductive and emotional labor from women. How can I make this more cruel and heartless and abusive? Oh, I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then realizing that, like, that thing that you, like, checked off a bunch of boxes for is not what you actually want, because that's not how desire works and love works.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then you just leave that thing behind and, you know, just discard it like you would discard any other, just, like, piece of junk that,
yeah,
you know,
like,
we buy
100%. Like, who still has their original iPod? That thing is,
oh God, it's somewhere in a drawer.
Yeah.
Are we working our way towards, like, right to repair with April?
No, boy.
Fuck yes. 100%. Absolutely. I was just gonna say, this is the shittiest version of that movie Her with Joaquin Phoenix.
Well, at the end she becomes, like, she, like,
yeah, it's actually, like, the good ending.
Yeah.
Because she realizes,
becomes,
I'm actually
the ether.
Yeah, she realizes, I'm actually too good for you, Joaquin Phoenix. Like,
yeah, no,
yourself.
I'm good. I'm just gonna hang out in this weird AI space.
I'm gonna hang out in the cloud. And, yeah, like, yeah,
yeah, this is pre the cloud, so you can't, like, upload April into anything, I guess.
Yeah, so when she dies, that's it.
She
and
was
then
a good
Spike
girlfriend
comes along.
Oh, yeah. I literally just, again, I must have, like, I knew this part happened, but I didn't know when. I knew that Spike decided that he needed a Buffy bot of his very own.
Spike.
Just making Spike it so hard for me to love him, really, truly. Like, I'm starting to think that I'm a masochist.
At least he's not Xander. At least
it's
he's
true.
Not.
Still,
no, it's
yeah,
true.
Yeah, still not the worst in this show.
I think the only, yeah, like the credit I give to Spike is that he's not human and Xander is.
Yeah.
And like Spike is like on, like how in the next episode Anya's working at like a deficit, like she's never experienced certain human things and has mm-hmm. no idea what to do with them. And I think Spike keeps like fumbling. He thinks that he's got something and then mm-hmm. he reacts with just like extreme anger and petulance and decides to make a Buffy bot because the actual Buffy won't have him.
I think,
and,
like,
yeah, that's not great.
the kind of like, I don't know, like I contrast Xander and Spike all the time when I'm watching the show, because like straight through the final fucking episode, Xander never changes. He's still the same. He's still so possessive of the women around him, so callous yeah. with their existences. And like Spike is not a nice fellow. You know, you don't bring Spike home to mom. But like,
I mean, they've tried.
Yeah. with that said, though, like Spike is at least like trying to navigate his messed up, like bombed out emotional interior. Like he's trying to do good at some point, or like be better than he used to be. And that's like something we could just literally never say for Xander.
Right. Like Spike gets the actual like hero's journey eventually and does change, you know. So I guess it's like knowing that I keep giving Spike extra credit,
mm-hmm.
knowing how many ridiculous mistakes he makes.
Mm-hmm. His Buffy sex doll, right? Like he winds up letting go of the Buffy sex doll. And what's the oh my God, what is it? I can't think of the episode. Oh my God, it's the last episode of season 5 and Xander stumbles across the Buffy sex doll. And his first thought, of course, isn't like, how can we use this? Yeah, the gift. There we go.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, because Xander is still like, oh. And like in this episode, he is, you can tell he's like considering.
Oh, 100%.
Like, huh, what would it be like if someone made me a sex doll? Like, what if I got an Anya sex double who like didn't disagree with me about anything? And I didn't have to, like, deal with her, you know, like, trying to become more of a human because that's a pain in the ass for me.
He also, like, openly objectifies the sex robot.
Yes.
And Anya is just like, yeah, it's cool. I know he loves me only. And even Xander makes a face like, and I'm like, I fucking hate this shit. I hate this.
And I fucking hate Xander so much. I'm sorry. But like, even in the gif, he's like cajoling Anya to marry him, emotionally blackmailing her with like the looming apocalypse for that shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, really?
What's like one of his final fucking lines in the show is, that's my girl.
Barf.
Spike should have killed him in the first episode with a fucking steamroller. I don't care. Alexander sucks.
100%.
Oh, well, you know, he's only the stand-in for Joss Whedon. So
let us draw no conclusions from that.
Yeah, nope. Really.
Mm-mm. Nah, that's fine. Anything else before we move on to the piece de resistance?
Oh, let's do it.
No, let's do it. Okay. Yeah. Folks, we're getting into the, I guess, I would say for me, probably one of the most harrowing episodes of Buffy.
Yeah, I guess also like mm-hmm. content warning, I
yeah,
guess.
Yeah, let's do
and also spoilers, because this is like a pretty big spoiler. I mean, we've said it before a million times in past episodes, so if you've been following along, oops. but yeah, definitely content warning for like pretty upsetting stuff.
Just if you're dealing with a lot of grief. Or a loss. You know, this is a hard one to watch.
It's tough, yeah.
So the episode is The Body. Buffy and her friends are overwhelmed with grief, and their lives are changed forever when they must deal with the loss of someone close to all of them.
I like how the little synopsis
they don't even
doesn't
say. Yeah. So
that's
well
good.
The interesting thing about this episode and the one before it, which is like, I'm glad we paired it with I Was Made to Love You and not like the opposite, like we watched The Body in Forever, is mm-hmm. that the episode before ends with Buffy walking into the house and noticing mm. that something's wrong with her
yeah.
mom. And then repeats that exactly in The Body.
This is also one of the first times where the episode does not open with a previously on Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Every other one for like probably the middle of season three, it's been a recap to keep, you know, keep you up. But this is kind of it's almost a standalone story. You know, aside from a few snippets of Ben and Glory. Oh, no, that was the previous one, wasn't it? So this is like entirely yeah. Almost a contained start to finish episode.
Yeah. And like there's no soundtrack. It's very much like, quote unquote, and I want to talk about this, like realistic, naturalistic mm-hmm. sounds. And it is one of those episodes that is considered like, it's like a critical success.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the reasons why, like, that I feel like we should talk about is, like, because it is realistic and not as genre. And, like, we should talk about that. Like, is that something, do you think that's something where people take this episode more seriously?
Well,
because they don't tie it to the supernatural?
Can I wanted to share this anyway, but can I yes. read you 1-star reviews of this episode from IMDb.com?
Oh my god, what?
Oh dear god.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, so here's one from user...
oh boy.
This user's name is Reality Check for You.
Jesus Christ. okay,
and
Xander.
I'm going to do a dramatic reading.
Okay.
The title says, like, watching a different series. This is not Buffy. This is a soap opera where a character dies. It's a boring stage play that makes you feel miserable. Dawn was the first thing to ruin Buffy. Having a full episode devoted to the death of Buffy's mom is the second thing to ruin Buffy. Boring and depressing.
Boring. I mean, depressing, sure.
Yeah, true.
Accurate.
Yeah.
Here we go. Here's the meat, the nugget. We don't watch Buffy for emotional crap. Stop trying to shove melodrama down our throats. The series was likable for the humor and action.
Was it?
What?
Oh, here you go. Here's the ending, though. It's okay. Kind of an upbeat. The only reason to continue watching this series is for Spike, a great character.
Well, okay, I agree. But
yeah, okay, yeah.
Facts in the case, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that certainly is a reality check for you.
I've been reality checked. Checkmate.
Yeah, Buffy might... My favorite show with no emotions. That's just wall-to-wall action.
Yeah, there's nothing about trauma in Buffy at all.
Humor and action for a show specifically labeled a supernatural drama series.
Yeah.
Yeah, I watch Buffy for the same reason I watch Crank, you know. I'm just here for the white-knuckling madness.
Or 30 Rock. It's just a joke a minute, Rock. Just crammed in.
Here's another one. This is great. The show's strength, I'm going to do another voice. The show's strength lies in never taking itself seriously until now. And it's painful to watch and not laugh at this ridiculous display of pathos.
You laughed at this, you psychopath.
Yeah, what a fucking good God.
Jesus.
Like, and you know what's crazy? These were like from 2 years ago.
Oh, that is
come
crazy.
On.
That's insane. So, like, nobody who, like, watched it as it was, you know, airing or, like, saw it, you know, on DVD or whatever. This is literally from, like, COVID era. Like,
Jesus.
Maybe they were fevered?
Maybe. Yeah, maybe they all had COVID.
They all had really bad fevers. But, that's fucking insane because it is some of the most, like, I think it's strongest because it is so real and subdued and and draws a lot from, like, a lot of this is based off of Joss's experience with his mom dying. So, like, the scene where she's looking at the phone and the buttons on the phone look all fucked up. That's a sensory thing that happened to him after he, you know, after dealing with his mom dying. And so, like, or, like, looking at the EMT and, like, watching his mouth move all weird, or the doctor or whatever, because you're, like, kind of right. not really there, you know. You're outside of your own body. Yeah, so, this is definitely my favorite episode, hands down.
It's interesting because I think, so I'm going to refer to one of my favorite essays that I bring out all the time is this essay by Linda Williams called Film Bodies, Gender, Genre, and Excess. It's great. It's such a good essay. Everyone should read it. But she talks about horror, melodrama, and porn as like being mm-hmm. extremely like embodied genres, and like people talk about horror, like Carol Clover talks about horror and porn as being like extremely embodied, you know, things that you like react to while you're watching it, like you scream or you have an orgasm. But Linda Williams talks about melodrama too, also as like genres that are not like super well respected by critics, mm-hmm. considered sort of genre of excess in various ways. You know, that they're like you're just sort of spilling forth emotion in lots of different ways. And it's interesting because this is like horror, you know, I mean, spoopy, I guess, as Ash would say. horror and melodrama in this episode particularly, and like those two things kind of spill into each other a lot in this episode. And like people talk about how it's an extremely realistic episode, but there's also a lot of like sort of like light hallucination and like disassociation,
yeah,
and fantasy and dream that kind of like fade in and out of this mm-hmm. too.
Yeah, Buffy has multiple scenes of her like Joyce just suddenly being alive again and then getting better,
yep.
and like being mm-hmm. and like it's God, and then it hard cuts.
Heartbreaking.
That was really rough. Mm-hmm. I was like, "Wait a minute, what?" But yeah. I also have a reading to present.
I love it when we have readings.
Well, there's a book called Sex and the Slayer. Kate, I don't know if you've read this, but I think you fucking
have it.
Love it.
I have.
Like it's a gender primer. It says a gender primer for Buffy the Vampire Slayer, written by Lorna Jowett. So she says,
okay.
Basically, she says that, and I've thought about this a lot too, watching this episode. She says that Joyce represents like stability for mm-hmm. all, you know, especially for Buffy, but kind of for all the Scoobies who, I mean, aside from maybe one episode where we saw Willow's mom, like, don't really have any parental connections, you know?
Yeah.
So Joyce is like a stand-in mom for all of them, really. So her death destroys this sort of dichotomy that, like, Buffy struggles with, that, like, normal life, non-supernatural vampire slayer life is, like, boring and trouble-free. And then on the Slayer side is like nothing but peril. And so it completely like shatters that. It's like, oh no, normal life can still be completely horrific and, you know, tough to deal with and struggle to accept. So I thought that was interesting.
That mm-hmm. is interesting. Yeah. And like the idea of the melodrama as fantasy, you know, there's all this fantasy that's like in this episode that is destroyed, you know, like there's the perfect like Christmas dinner that they're all having.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's the moment where Joyce recovers, and like the destruction of that fantasy is also like sort of the destruction of the family for a lot of melodrama, you know, in some way that like a mother dies, a daughter dies, like, you know, there's a breakup, like things get sort of torn apart.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. And Ash, what do you think?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Ahead. No. I'll save my point for later.
No, I'm just really enjoying this. This is great.
I feel so smart.
I'm here for readings. This is good. Yeah, I haven't read either of those. Readings. Now I'm like, oh, I got to catch up. No, like, I think it's from like a formal perspective, it's so important that Joyce isn't killed by like a wizard or a demon or a vampire or something, right? Because like, if Joyce would have been killed by anything fantastic, that would have opened the door to her being resurrected just like everybody else in the show.
Yeah.
Like the death is so, it's so real and permanent, and then Buffy's disassociation, and that like, you know, like when you have someone close to you die, those like first few days or weeks after that, like you're always kind of like expecting them to call, expecting them to come back home. Mm-hmm. Like the kind of permanence of that absence hasn't set in yet. Like this is such an eerie, haunting episode. It's like Buffy's not a scary show, but this is one of the few episodes that's like, this is like a scary kind of ghost story episode.
Yes.
In a way. And then like even because there's that vampire fight at the end, right?
Oh God.
Yeah. Which a lot of people, I don't know who exactly, but like a lot of critics, that was like a, you know, like people didn't love that because it like took, people thought it like took you out of the quote unquote realism.
Mm-hmm. So I used to like not like that vampire fight for that exact reason. I was like, oh, is this like a studio thing where they're like, you're making a Buffy episode, boys. If there's not a vampire in it, we're not paying.
Yeah, he's like chomping a stogie.
He's got the giant
cigar.
I want
three pictures of vampires on my desk by Monday.
His monocle pops out when he doesn't see the vampire in the final cut. What?
Yeah.
But no, it's
where's
like,
where's my
like,
vamp?
Even this kind of like fantastic, playful vampire stuff like bends around the arc of the body of Buffy's mom dying. And I'm like, you know, there aren't bodies in Buffy. Nobody really dies in this show. People, you know, they get dusted or they get vaporized.
Yeah, vampires disappear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this
there is
this
no
is like
body.
A corpse.
Right.
And so that fight in the end is such like a, you know, like the kind of like the cloth falls off the body, you know, mm-hmm. while fighting the vampire. And it's such like a confrontation with like the, oh, like this is going to be a death that we don't just get over like the death of everybody else in the show.
Absolutely.
Even Buffy's own death.
That sort of touches on what I wanted to bring up is that vampire fight, it highlights the fact that like this entire season, this entire actually like couple seasons, four and five, has been like Buffy struggling to deal with like powers and things that are beyond her ability to punch and like kill.
Yeah.
And so so stuff like dealing with Glory, who is literally too powerful for her to just like knock her fucking head off. Mm-hmm. And her mom dying, who is just like, how do you fix that? Like, you can't, you know, you can't roundhouse kick your way back to her being alive. So I think it's really interesting. The fight at the end highlights like, yes, this is something that I can do. This is something that I can kill. And this is a problem that I can solve immediately with force and with fists and with my muscles. And then to see, to just have Joyce still be there and the problem, quote unquote, still be unresolved for her and never will be, it is like a juxtaposition that I thought was just like perfect. Like, it's perfect.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I think there, while I was watching it and the vampire rises up from underneath the cloth, At first I was like, oh, right, that happens. That's stupid. And then, you know, because it's like that always happens, like in every you know, if you're in a morgue in a horror movie,
your back is
to something that is going to wake up.
Yeah.
But being on the Hellmouth and vampires rising is like just day to day business for Buffy. And like you said, Leslie, like that's something that Buffy knows very well how to get out of. And like, that vampire, like you said too, Ash, like that vampire just disappears. Like, mm-hmm. they turn into dust. They're not material. Like, you don't see the like cold, waxy skin of a corpse, mm-hmm. which is terrifying. You know, it's like one of the scariest things, you know, the most abject thing that you come in contact with as a human is a dead body.
Yeah.
Because the leakiness of what's alive and what's not alive and like where your body starts and ends, like kind of unravels, you know, when you, because you're face to face with something that's going to happen to you. And like that's why this episode is so intense. Like they focus on Joyce's face as a corpse so many times, and it's so intense.
Her eyes being open in that first scene too is just like brutal.
For really, really long time. Do you know they made Sarah Michelle Gellar do that scene? And that's a long scene too. It's all one take where she like sees the body. She goes into the kitchen to grab the phone and come back. That's all one long shot. They made her do that 7 times.
Shit.
Like imagine being so, having to be so, keep up that emotional rawness for 7 like good 45 to 90 second takes, like, oof, insane. Just really, really impressive.
And like the fact that her first reaction is that like Glory is involved in some way, like there's got to be a reason why this happened.
Yeah, it's that thing of like there must be a bad guy that I can defeat somehow, and not just, you know, that's just life and that's, you know, that's just what happens, you know, there's no explanation for it. That's like really, really tough for Buffy to deal with.
There's one cut of like Joyce in the morgue getting like her, like, you know, it doesn't get very graphic, but like getting the beginning of her like clothes cut off. That this watch particularly I think really hit me pretty hard. Just like the cuts in this episode are really interesting and like so different from the rest of the show.
Yeah, the scene, the little moment that got me and I was like, oh my god, I literally started crying, was she called the ambulance is on the way, and Buffy notices that like Joyce's skirt has like ridden up.
Oh,
and
yeah,
so she like pulls it down as if that's gonna do anything, like, but just something to, you know. Yeah, I don't know why that got me. That just really got me, because it's like it's a tiny thing that you would do for somebody if they were still alive, you know.
Right,
you don't want that. You well, don't want them to see her like that.
It's just so human.
Yeah, it's just like a tiny little thing that, like, you know, you would do, you know.
Yeah,
like you don't want people, it's like, you know, if someone you love is dead, you want them to look as nice as they can, which is such a wild instinct, but obviously it's an instinct because I would do it too.
Yeah.
And then I think another thing that's really interesting about this episode is like at the beginning when Buffy's talking to the like the person at on the 911 operator, you know, they're like, the body, and she says, no, it's my mother, and like is very intense about that. And then by the end of the episode, it's like, it's not my mother anymore, like she's gone.
Yeah, Dawn says like, where did you go, or something like that,
mm-hmm.
to like really denote that, yeah, she's not there anymore.
And like that, there it's just a strange thing that like in these two episodes there's like two deaths, and like Buffy has to sit with April in the first episode and then like misses her mom dying.
Yeah, almost, yeah, basically,
because she's like out doing work.
yeah I mean, like, that obviously fits in so nicely with, like, what's going to happen to Buffy over the rest of the season, you know, as she has to kind of, like, absorb elements of the reproductive labor that Joyce was responsible for.
Yes.
Yeah.
And, really get strained in that space of being, like, both slayer and surrogate mother while still trying to have her own damn life.
Yeah.
We've talked about this before, how like she doesn't really have a period of like young womanhood. She's like high school plucky, you know, Buffy, and then has a couple of like a season and a half in college, and then Dawn shows up where she's basically, as soon as Dawn shows up, she's already in surrogate mom mode to me.
Yep.
Definitely.
And then more and more and more as Joyce, you know, has the brain tumor and all that stuff, like, And then, yeah, this is like the final strands of her like girlhood have been completely cut.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. I mean, especially when they show like Buffy going to school to pick up Dawn.
Yeah.
And like she has to break the news to Dawn. And that's such a mom role, yep. You know, to be picking up someone from school and having to break, you know, just horrible news to them.
Yeah, and this is like a sea change in the show's dynamics too, because like after mm-hmm. this episode, you know, like who does Buffy start like relating to a lot more? It's like Giles and Spike. These yeah. other people who are like beforehand coded as being like these older adult figures who weren't kind of like imbricated in the teenage mayhem of the Scooby Gang.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean that's kind of like foreshadowed in that episode with you know, where Spike tells Buffy all about the two slayers he's killed mm-hmm. and how Buffy is, you know, the other side of the slayer is this sort of like constant facing of and obsession with death. You mm-hmm. know, that like she's really close to death and there's part of her that sort of like lives on that needs that. And yeah. those are things that like 22-year-olds don't like, literally their brains are not formed to understand that yet. You know, like so to have to face those things is, you know, something that would definitely alienate you from your friends who are still sort of dealing with things like coming out and like getting a job mm. and things, you know, not that those are not important things, but they're very different from yeah. you know, like the grief of like being a slayer in general and then being a slayer who lost her mom and has to take care of her sister who is a key. It's a lot. She's got a lot on her plate.
A lot going on.
By the way, this rewatch too is the most sympathetic I've ever been towards Dawn. I don't know.
Oh my god, I was gonna say that.
Yeah.
I'm so on Dawn's side. I have come around on Dawn.
Me too. I don't know if it's like an age thing or what it is, but like I really identified with her in that, like, one, even just like being in school with her for like 5 minutes and being an outcast and like having someone sort of be like, actually, you are kind of cool. And like, I like the painting that you're doing, you know, like,
yeah,
that moment. And also just like the fact that she had to be drawing negative space right before her mom dies. Mm-hmm.
Right? Like how fitting. Oh, man.
But yeah, this is the most I hated Dawn, I think, on my first couple of watches of Buffy.
I think that's so natural, though, right? Because like Dawn is kind of reinserted as a teen by the time everyone has moved on to like young adulthood.
Right. Yeah.
And that kind of that works keeping a pace with like the viewership of Buffy. Like if you had been watching this season by season, kind of age out of that with them. And then you're like shocked into this acid bath of your awkward teen years ago.
Yeah. Like who's this jerk? I don't want to think about being 13.
There's a name for that, isn't it? Like the cousin Oliver.
Oh, yeah, like when they try and refresh a show with a kid.
Inexplicable, to try and capture, the interest of, like, a younger audience. But I think it's different because Dawn has, like, a plot purpose, you know? I don't really see her as, like, a cousin Oliver or, like...
Yeah. It's funny that people still think of it that way because I think that she plot wise she absolutely serves her purpose.
Makes sense within the context of the show,
right?
And did like teens like Dawn when the show was out? Because I like nobody likes Dawn. That's the thing about Dawn.
Right.
You know, it's not like they dragged her out as like a Robin to Buffy as Batman, where Dawn is now cool and kicking ass and has an exciting costume.
Yeah, and saying
she's
like,
there and she just like sucks and is annoying like a teenager.
Right. Yeah, she's like so real. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess maybe now that I'm like, I could have a Dawn. I'm like, oh, God. I should be more thoughtful awkward tweens, you know? Like my niece's and nephew on my partner's side are tweens, and I'm watching them be awkward, and like, I can't wait until they're old enough to watch Buffy. It's gonna be so exciting. But but yeah, like, that is a rough time in life, the mm-hmm. junior high years.
Oh yeah. Yep.
Oof.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Middle school was way worse for me than high school.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, it's a nightmare.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's fully it is a bodily nightmare for sure. Like mm-hmm. hormones, strange thing, you know, just like the idea of being a kid and suddenly like all these scary things happen to your body. It's so wild. And like, for Dawn to have all those things in addition to like basically being a new thing, you know, but like not really, that's insane. So I feel like I just have a lot of empathy for her that I didn't used to have.
Mm-hmm. And Dawn's like part character, part MacGuffin too. So it must have been so hard to like write her and keep her active in the show.
Yeah. Yeah. And like I was saying earlier, like just having a few minutes with her at school was very helpful. Mm-hmm. Like she has a friend that she talks to in the bathroom, and she like maybe has some artistic talent. Like that really gives her some shades that like you don't necessarily get as just like Buffy's annoying younger sister who breaks things all the time, you know?
Yeah. I have a question.
Yes.
Is this the first time we have seen Willow and Tara kiss on screen?
Mm. It is, right? I thought that was the body. I thought that's the other thing about the body besides the body is that's their first kiss.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
Okay. Because they've been like dancing around it. Like literally there's scenes with Willow and Tara dancing at the Bronze or whatever.
I mean, obviously they're fucking, but like we just don't get to see mm-hmm. any of it.
Yeah,
I'm assuming.
I can't tell if I appreciate or am annoyed by their almost like kind of lack of PDA.
Oh, like lesbian bed desk situation.
I mean, I don't want it to be like the very special lesbian kiss episode, like where they're like, you know, they're fucking like rose petals start coming down from the ceiling, and that song is like.
That's later. That's in the Once More with Feeling.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly.
A bunch of lavender and battle axes. Just
It's
great. Like Joan of Arc boob chest armor.
Boob plates.
Yeah.
That's what happens when Beth comes over here. It's
like hell yeah. I just don't know if I appreciate or am annoyed by the fact that they just kind of, they like call each other baby occasionally, but like they're very not affectionate with each other. I don't know. There was that I appreciated that moment where Willow was like, I had too much nog, and Tara was like, do you want me to rub your belly, baby? And I'm like, I want more of that. I want more like dumb, like domestic romantic love between them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel it. Like the dumb domestic stuff where like Willow's trying to find a sweater and Tara's like, maybe it's in my room. Did you leave it in the laundry room?
They're just
room?
like I think they're together all the time. So
yeah, like that's good subtext for like clearly they're like going back and forth between staying in each other's rooms.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they're trying, but
yeah.
It also feels like they don't really know, outside of like those cute passes at things, those little playful winks that like if you're like a savvy presumed like progressive viewer of Buffy as the Whedon-esque politic was once, you know, kind of famed for, you get it. But like it's also kind of apparent that like, oh, now we know how kind of like it is a bit for show. It is a bit hollow. There's kind of like a missing core to the queer relationships in Buffy.
Right. It's kind of like, what do lesbians do? Do they hold hands? Mm-hmm. Do they kiss? Like,
should we? Cute in jokes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like they're not sure. They're like,
no
we
tops,
wouldn't know how
no
to
bottoms.
Show this.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Tara's
exactly.
Like, did I leave my strap in your car? Fuck.
Yeah.
The prop department only has so much flannel, you know, the costume department. I do think it's fucking hysterical that Willow says, why do all my sweaters have dumb shit on them?
Like, oh, that was really sweet. I was wondering, could we talk a little bit about just everyone's reactions, like how processing their grief?
It's interesting mm-hmm. because each one of them almost represents a different aspect of like the whatever the grief cycle is.
Right. Yeah, like, it's a little too like Pat, where it's just like, it's like, I punch things. Yeah, I'm nervous.
I'm angry. Like, yeah. And like Buffy's doing a lot. She's like obviously bargaining because she's having those hallucinations of like Joyce coming back to life or whatever. But yeah, I do think it's interesting. And then Anya is like the only one that I was like, that's totally on point, you know?
Yeah. I know. I really felt for her too. In this episode mm-hmm. because she is being really annoying and like she is saying things that you shouldn't say, but like death is very strange. Like I remember when my grandfather died, I was one of the only people who didn't go up to the open casket because I just couldn't I just didn't want to do it.
Yeah.
And I just mm-hmm. was like, I think it's so strange that we have these, you know, cultural norms that if you don't do them, they're rude. But then, like, we also acknowledge that everyone processes grief differently. And you're like, so I just have to, like, walk up to this casket and look at my grandfather, even though I don't want to? Like, that's really fucked up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like, I'm sure he wouldn't have want you to be uncomfortable, you know?
Yeah.
He wouldn't have, like, made you do that.
And people have really complicated feelings when someone dies, you know? Like, it's very complicated and not linear in any way. And it is kind of nice to have somebody in the mix, I guess, who is constantly saying the wrong thing.
Yeah.
You know, and then Willow is, like, suddenly becomes this, like, like middle-aged mom
mm-hmm.
where she just wants to make sure she looks okay.
Yeah.
And then
yeah,
of course,
I feel so
Xander's...
much for Anya.
Yeah.
Cause she's like just a literal demon at a human funeral. It's like, of course she's going to say weird shit. God knows what she would do at a human funeral a year ago, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. It's like, we've already established that she's like 1,000 years old and like mm-hmm. she knew Santa Claus, you know, like
she's
why
seen some shit.
Yeah, like yeah. Why do you keep expecting her to have normal reactions? Like,
yeah,
I mean, it's just so funny that we, first of all, yeah, like not all funerals all over the world look the same way mm-hmm. either, but it's so wild that we just like make an assumption about 1,000-year-old demon that they would be like, yeah, I get funerals. They make total sense to me. Like, they're so rich, like ritualistic and weird, and we just think they're mm-hmm. normal because that's what we've normalized.
Can I tell you my the last time I went to a funeral in my experience?
Sure.
It's funny, but it's it wasn't supposed to be funny.
Oh no. Yeah, like church giggles.
Well, no.
Okay.
What happened to me is my grandma died in 2018, I want to say. She was like super super Catholic, so she had like a Catholic mass funeral, and they did all the stuff. First of all, I didn't know that they had changed a lot of the stuff that they say because I haven't been. It's been a little while, you know.
Okay.
Since I've been, so I was saying all the wrong things, and everybody was like, so that was already really great for me. and then. Because we were family, we were like up in front, and then they were doing the communion, and I was close enough to the guy that he like gestured it to me and offered it to me, and I made a motion because I was so fucking nervous and like feeling a lot of things. I made a motion like, oh no, thank you, I'm very full.
Oh, no. No, I couldn't. I couldn't
yeah,
have
I
another
couldn't
one.
Possibly. I had a big yeah.
Oh dear.
What did you like brutal. Rub your belly?
Yeah, I did. I was like, I was, and I waved my hand. I was like, no, I'm good. I'm good. Thank you, Father. No. Yeah, so that's great for me. Yeah.
You're like, oh, you don't want the body of Christ in this shit. Like,
yeah, you definitely. Yeah, no, I will start. I will start. My head will start spinning around and puking like the Exorcist. You do not want me in here. I literally like felt my skin tingling as soon as I got into the church. I was like, oh, the big man,
uh-oh,
do not want me here. Jizu yeah, is not a fan of me being in his house with my muddy shoes. You know,
oh, enemy man territory.
Yeah.
There's nothing worse. Like being the like I was raised Catholic, but being the daughter of a divorced mom.
Ooh,
where like
rough.
When I was like when I got communion, it was like, oh, okay, I can go up, but my mom isn't allowed to. And you're like, what
yeah,
the fuck?
And
like,
everybody knows.
And everybody just looks.
Yeah.
Oh, she wouldn't annul her marriage, that crazy bitch. You know, like, what is wrong with you people?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think I empathized or like related to Anya the most because she was so like out of place and like felt very like, I don't know what is the right thing to do. So my only response is going to be like the first knee jerk reaction that I have, which is to say, no, thank you, Father. I'm full. Like, so I think that's why.
That is an amazing,
yeah,
amazing reaction.
Right, yeah. Good stuff.
Oh, man. I did also love Tara's moment with Buffy.
Yeah, that was really beautiful because we already knew that her mom was dead from the one episode where her family tries to come collect her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that was a really nice little, and we don't really see the two of them interact very often. So that was
not really,
really
no.
That was a nice little moment for sure.
Yeah, and the way it was shot was really beautiful. It's like, you know, straight on.
Yeah,
like,
just simple.
Buffy's on one end and Tara's on the other. And like, I thought everyone did a really good job with like extremely subtle, because it's, you know, a more subtle episode, I guess, in a lot of ways than most.
Yeah, for sure.
It's not, mm-hmm, you know, all the action and humor that, what's that person from the beginning?
Reality check for you.
Reality check for you. Mm-hmm. Love so much about Buffy, but just the awkwardness of the way everyone like sort of carried themselves in this episode was really,
yeah,
good. You know,
you want to know what I noticed? So Tara in the beginning, when she's very shy, kind of has a speech impediment.
Mm-hmm.
She kind of takes a while to get some words out. And then as the series progresses and as she develops her relationship with Willow and everybody, she kind of drops it away. She gets more confident in her speaking. And I noticed that she started to do that again as she's talking to Willow and especially in the scene with Buffy. So I thought that was a nice like character touch.
Yeah.
To like, you know, she's out of her, you know, she's kind of off her game, out, you know, not as confident as she normally is. So that nervous kind of like, I don't know what the like scientific name for it, but a speech impediment starts to like rear its head again.
Mm-hmm.
So that was interesting.
Yeah. And in that scene, Buffy is like, she's got her hands between her legs and she's kind of like folded into herself, you know, like,
mm-hmm, yeah,
trying to find some sort of comfort and, you know, just being incredibly uncomfortable and awkward and, you know, not the usual way that we see Buffy, you know, like the sort of like iconic Buffy at the end of the like opening credits where she's like usually holding some sort of battle axe or something, you know.
Yeah,
like,
exactly,
completely the opposite.
Yeah, very like turned in on herself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like you see how small she is, I,
yeah,
feel like in this episode,
sure,
in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Do we have any other, yeah, thoughts or feelings about the body?
I just wanted to note the like sound effects or like lack thereof. You know, we talked about like there's no music, but like I thought it was really interesting that the reason that it sounds like this is they recorded all of the microphones like very close to the actors. So
yeah,
their sort of whispers and like the kind of cracks in their voice as they're being very emotional are like way louder than they normally would be.
Mm.
And I thought that was really a nice touch to like bring you in, you know, as with a show that's like big kind of action set pieces. The audience is like kind of, and humor and action.
Yeah.
But the audience is kind of like set at a distance so that we can see everything that's going on. But then this one, they really like brought us like into the room and into the scene with them, which I thought was really nice. And I thought it was interesting how when she's on the, I think she's on the phone or something, or she's in the kitchen. Oh, it's like after she's like she puked because she's like in shock. Yes. That there's like just noises on the street because like the world's just going by. Like your mom just died, mm-hmm. but like the world is just continuing to turn.
I can't believe they showed like the puke sort of start to like show through the paper towel. I was like,
yeah,
it's like the Safdie brothers directed Buffy or something. Like it gets so gritty,
visceral,
for like one moment, you know,
and
visceral. Like that scene is pretty amazing where like she kind of, you hear like car horns and then you hear like wind chimes.
Yeah, just a normal day outside for everybody else,
right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's a beautiful scene.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, I hate to give Jess any credit at all, but maybe he stole it from Hitchcock or something. I don't know.
It was somebody else. That was a DP. That was
He went to the bathroom and someone was like, "I have a great idea. Let's just give Joss credit for it."
Oh,
he was Whedon. He was in the back room jerking himself off with $100 bills. Right. We haven't said that in a long time.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Oh man.
But yeah,
let that back out.
Yeah, let's pretend that you're a DP. Took care of that.
Yeah.
Because
it
is a beautiful scene.
Mm-hmm. It's just so lived in. This whole episode is so lived in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's something that very few Buffy episodes feel like organic and in place. And this one is just like so raw.
Yeah, it's true.
Yep.
Yeah, like they all have like a cool sort of ironic distance to them.
Mm-hmm.
Or a lot of them do. And like, it's interesting that like literally the mics are closer to them, and so that like distance, both like you feel less distance in this episode, and it part of that is because of like something that materially changed like in the filming of it. That's pretty cool.
Yeah,
there's definitely no cool irony in mm-hmm. this episode at all.
No, it is. It's very raw.
Mm-hmm.
Good stuff. Good stuff.
Yeah.
Well,
thank you, Ash, so much for coming
Ash,
on
yay!
For like this incredibly serious, momentous episode.
Yeah, we'd have a bummer of a Thursday.
No, my God, I had a good time. I mean,
good.
For like the first 50 minutes, I had a good time, and then the rest of it, I had a very somber and serious time.
Yeah.
But no, I love coming on. Thanks for the memories, and thank the two of you so much for inviting me.
So yeah, what do you got going on? You got anything? I mean, obviously, the podcast is chug-a-lugging along, doing very well.
Yeah, Horror Vanguard. We just did our 300th episode.
Yeah.
What? That's crazy.
And
so
it was
many,
how many
so
hours
many.
Long?
That one was only 3 hours long.
Oh, okay.
Only 3 hours. Okay.
The Halloween episode
the Halloween
is just
episode.
Shy of 9 hours long.
Oh my God! I
That's
can't believe you did it.
Absolutely buck wild.
Neither can I.
I know. I read the thing and I was like, "That can't be real." Oh
that
no, it
be.
Is.
Everybody thinks it's a bit until they hit play, and then they're like,
it's
"Why?
True.
Why is a little scrubber bar not moving forward on my podcast?" app? Like, no, it's a 9 hour episode.
Surely
on the
I'd be halfway
movies.
Done by now. Nope.
Incorrect.
A full day of work.
Yeah,
right
with overtime.
There.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I hope you took bathroom breaks.
Mostly just some panicked screaming breaks, but
okay,
the usual.
That's fine too.
You go. Oh man.
Yeah, do you have anything else you want to plug?
Oh, you know, it's the podcast, and then sometime early in the new year, I'm going to get a Substack. So look forward, dear listeners, look forward to whatever I'm doing with that.
Sweet.
Excellent.
TBD, forthcoming. Watch this space.
Yes.
Radical. I love it. Well, yeah, for us, you know, for links to our socials, a link to our Patreon where you can get After Dark episodes where Kate and I just shoot the shit. And then to also get the show on your podcatching app of choice. I'm a professional voice actor. Go to fangs.zone. It's all there, all for you.
And get in that zone.
Get in the zone. And yeah, we will see you next time on Fangs for the Memories. See ya, suckers.